To order the Oro Valley Town Council regular and study session, December 1st, 2021. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Bowen?
Here.
Councilmember Green?
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. Thank you. Seven council members are present. I move to go into the first executive session item with the town manager, assistant town manager, legal services director, town attorney, and the town clerk, and to go into the second executive session item with the town manager, assistant town manager, town attorney, chief information officer, and the town clerk.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion passes 7-0. To reconvene our regular session, we began earlier this evening at 5. We had an empty chamber at that point, so I want to welcome each of you that have joined us this evening for this regular and study session for December 1st, 2021. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Here.
Councilmember Bowen?
Here.
Councilmember Green?
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Here.
Councilmember Solomon?
Here.
And Mayor Winfield?
Here. Seven members of council are present. Okay, Mr. Standish, if you would read item 5.
Direction to legal counsel, town manager, and or other necessary staff regarding the property commonly known as the former Vistoso Golf Course.
I move to proceed as directed in executive session.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, say nay. Motion passes 7-0. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Standish, upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Water Finance Subcommittee will be meeting on December 6th at 10 a.m. in the Water Utility Conference Room. The Historic Preservation Commission will also be meeting on December 6th at 5 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. Then the next Planning and Zoning Commission meeting is scheduled for December 7th at 6 p.m. in the Council Chambers. The Correction Officers Retirement Plan Board will be meeting on December 8th at 3:30 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. The December 13th Water Utility Commission meeting has been canceled. Then the Board of Adjustment has a special session scheduled for December 14th at 3 p.m. in the Council Chambers. The Planning and Zoning Commission will then be holding a study session on December 14th at 6 p.m. in the Council Chambers. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a meeting on December 14th at 6 p.m. in the Hopi Conference Room. And then the next Town Council regular session is currently scheduled for December 15th at 6 p.m. here in the Council Chambers. But please note, there is an action item on tonight's consent agenda for a possible cancellation of that meeting. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Council reports this evening. I'd like to report that the Oro Valley PD Citizens Academy concluded a few weeks ago. This year, because of COVID, there were two classes on a Tuesday and Wednesday evening for a period of 12 weeks. We appreciate very much Chief Riley authorizing that and advocating for that. We had wonderful participation from our community, and I strongly encourage anyone who's not participated in the Citizens Academy for our police department to certainly consider registering to do that in the upcoming year. I believe the next course will begin in February. And I'd
may I come in?
Sure.
I'd just like to give a shout out to Mike Kleinberg, who was in charge of organizing the academy. He did an outstanding job. It was really amazing, as the mayor has said. So congratulations to him and to the department.
And I'd like to recognize that Councilmember Bowen, Councilmember Green, Vice Mayor Barrett, and myself were able to participate in the course over the 12-week period. And so I wanted to acknowledge their participation. Ms. Jacobs will present her report this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. I just have one item I wanted to report, and that is that we're very excited to see that the Push Ridge 9-hole course is going to be used for something not quite regular golf, but frisbee golf. And this weekend, the Arizona State Disc Golf Championship will be held at the Push Ridge course. And spectators are welcome. We want to thank the friends of Push Ridge Golf who are helping to organize some spectators of the adjacent neighborhoods. But they played there for quarterfinals a few weeks ago and really enjoyed it. So if you don't have anything better to do on a beautiful weekend with beautiful views, I encourage you to go watch some frisbee golf. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I've removed my mask because I'm being told that I'm not being easily heard this evening. I think I'm being heard in the council chambers, but maybe it's the audience that are viewing this. So I'm doing my best. The agenda will remain as posted, and I don't have any blue cards for call to audience. We'll go to presentations. Mr. Standish, the first presentation, please.
Oravelle Peak Performance Presentation, Adopt a Roadway Trail.
So this evening, the presentation will be by our Assistant Public Works Director, Amy Ramsey. Amy.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm very excited to be here to present to you guys the first process improvement brought to this council. The process improvement initiative started in 2018. This is the first one we're bringing to Mayor and Council, and we hope that quarterly we'll bring you a new one. I'm really excited about this one because it was it's the first one of its kind to also be outward-facing. So it's going to help the public as well. Yes! Okay. So first I'd like to say that this was a team effort. It was cross-departmental, from Public Works to Park and Recs, Innovation and Technology to the Town Manager's Office. This wouldn't have happened if each and every one of these team members hadn't participated. In the audience, I actually have Richard Furrier, Amanda Jacobs, and Nancy Ellis with me, part of the team, and without them, this just wouldn't have happened. So I feel privileged to be up here presenting for them. So this is part of our beautification program. There are currently three processes in place. There's the Adopt a Road, which is managed by Public Works, Adopt a Trail by Park and Recs, Nancy Ellis, and Adopt a Trailhead. All of them are surrounding a community pride and keeping our area beautiful. It all comes down to, why did we do this? We had an Adopt a Road program. Well, the program we had was cumbersome. It had single points of failure. I don't know if you ever tried to find the Adopt a Road or the Adopt a Trail program. But if you wanted any information, you needed to get hold of Nancy, or on our side, Carmen, because they were the keepers of the gate. They knew all the information. They knew which trails were adopted, which roads were the adopted. The rest of us had no idea. It had lack of resources, too many forms. Forms after forms after forms we were asking our community residents to fill out. And then there was lack of oversight on the whole program. So, for instance, if you wanted to know what road was adopted, well, they'd call me, they'd call Jessica, and I'd say, let me transfer you to Carmen Ryan. She's the only one that really knew. We had forms to fill out. You had to download the form. You had to complete it manually. You had to scan it in, and hopefully you knew how to do that. Then you had to email it back to us. On top of that, we asked you to come in, do a training. Then we asked you to fill out another form, a participation form, a right-of-way form. Oh, and did I mention that the participation form had to be filled out four times a year? So form after form after form, very cumbersome. Now it's all online, it's all on one space, and it's all submitted with one button. So it's bringing it all together. Last year, we had an initiative of Keep Oro Valley Beautiful. That was a big event. When we have big events and we have enough volunteers, we can do a whole roadway or a whole segment. These three elements, adopt a road, adopt a trail, and a trailhead, take it down to a one-mile segment. Anyone in the town can adopt it, and then they set their own quarterly schedule. They go out there and help us keep everything beautiful. So Keep Oro Valley Beautiful is the umbrella, and these three follow suit. They have their own little landing page on the town website, and you can get the program information here. You can get contact information, and you can run through all of these accordions and get the rules and the responsibilities. To the right on the page, you have three major links. You have Adopt a Road program information, Adopt a Road if you're ready to go, and then you have schedule cleanup, because you can actually schedule a cleanup right from here. And it will take you to our newly Adopt a Road page. Very excited. The graphics, Pia put together. Like I said, this was a team effort. You can go and you can select what you want to do right from this page. You can adopt a road. You can adopt a trail, you can adopt a trailhead, or you can schedule a cleanup of any one of those three elements. You can get back to the Oro Valley page from here. All the information, if you look at all the, I don't know if I have a pointer on this thing, but on all the information you need on how to work through the program is on this page under the scheduling information, all one place. I'm going to now sort of transition to Adopt a Road because that's sort of my area, and I'm going to sort of show you the pages. But this is the Adopt a Road page. So if you click on Adopt a Road, you go straight to here, and here it is. Blue means adopted, green means go. You can have it if you want it. It's easy, it's simple. If you are on the Adopt a Trail or Trailhead, it's green and red, just different colors, but for those of you that have a little bit of difficulty like me sometimes when these lines are so tiny, on the left of the page also has, in text format, the available roads. It can't be any easier. You know which roads are there to adopt and which ones are not. To the right of the page is where you start the process. You literally start with your first name. There's a little scroll bar to the right. You keep going, and we've made it as easy as 1, 2, 3. You pick the page, you read through the responsibilities, you're electronically consigned. If you have one of those nifty computers that you can write on, you can sign your name, you read, you go to the bottom, you can watch the video from your own home and learn all about the responsibilities. You don't have to come see us, you don't have to meet with us, and then you sign off, you hit a submit button, and you are done. One and done. The exciting thing about this page that you don't see on the back end is our IT department has worked very, very close with us. And for the first time in Oro Valley history, this system will feed right into our, and you may have heard me talk about our Cartograph Operations Management System. It's what Public Works keeps organized. It's where all our work orders go into. It's where all our assets are. This is how we take care of every road, every sign in the town. This system will feed that system. So the application goes directly to that system, and we can approve it there. From there, if we hit approve, it will issue a new ticket saying, go get a sign. And we now it goes to directly to the traffic engineer group and charge of the signs. From there, if somebody schedules a cleanup from the site, we get a ticket to go pick up the trash. So that integration and this whole process took about a year, but I cannot say, try not to be really excited, but I really am, because this was not a feat that was easy. Our IT department, I had a vision, but this group made it reality. This used to take people 700 to 800 hours a year to manage. And then we didn't have anybody out there. The folks that are going to be in charge of this, Nancy Ellis on her side, and then Jose Rodriguez on the traffic engineering side. Traffic engineering is now going to be in charge of this. Guess where our construction inspectors are? They're out on the road almost every day. So now we'll have oversight as well. So if we see a road sort of, you know, building up trash, we can go, it's a shared database, we can see the last time somebody was out there, we can call them up and a friendly reminder. So as I mentioned, it's a pretty site, but it's also a very functional site. And I'm very, very proud of the group and what they've accomplished. Like I said, in manpower alone, we're saving about 800 hours a month, a year, I'm sorry, not a month. That'd be cool, but no. Do I have any questions?
Yeah. Council, I'd certainly invite questions, comments.
I have a question.
Okay, Council Member Jones-Ivy and then Vice Mayor Barrett.
Amy, now you said it was 700 to 800 hours that of IT. That was hours that were being spent on just trying to adopt a road.
That was 800 hours in our department that was just spent on manually tracking all these little pieces that are now combined into one area, saved automatically for us.
Okay.
It's beauty.
And so what is the time now? Is it just
it takes,
a matter of pressing a button? Or
yeah, it's a button, really, that saves it, because they've also created a nice little place on our drive that saves these automatically. And while we're working through the ins and outs, we're still... It's still a process improvement. And so we're learning with every day that somebody picks up the phone. What we found out that we sent out emails announcing it to get everybody to renew their roads, we forgot how to do a renew button. So we're slowly walking through that process. But, so it was 800 hours of staff time on our side.
Well, thank you. I'm very impressed. I actually went on when I was liaison to Stormwater to try to adopt a road, but it was a daunting process, I can tell you, and I, of course, never completed it. So thank you very much for all the hard work you all have done.
Now Amy's left you without excuse, Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Tell me about it.
I'd just like to briefly compliment you on a great program and a great presentation. So thank you to you and your team. I think this is going to be a real improvement for us, and I look forward to seeing it move forward and all these other peak performance initiatives to make the town better. Thank you.
Thank you, Council, for making it all happen, and the peak performance, even the town manager. This is great stuff. I'm really excited.
Council Member Bowen.
Amy, thank you for your efforts. Over the last weekend, I found myself bicycling on Oracle northbound on the east side, and quite frankly, I was shocked at what bad condition Oracle is in terms of refuse. Mm-hmm. And I realize that's a state highway. Is there a program available for people that might want to clean up Oracle? Are you aware of anything?
Council and Council Member Bowen, ADOT has an Adopt a Road program as well, and Oracle is part of that program. There are some parts of it that are adopted. I don't know if which segments are, but we can look and see. But I was doing the same thing on my way to Target and thinking how this program is going to at least help us keep our side of the street. But you're right, Oracle needs some help, and maybe we can work with ADOT to help bolster that program.
Thank you.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Well, first of all, thanks for doing that. It's great to, saving 700-800 hours. I assume that's $30,000 or so a year. And then plus, you know, we have a lot of great volunteer work in Oro Valley, so making the process easier for them, for us, and it helps all the citizens because our roads are going to be cleaner. So I really appreciate that. With the program, do they adopt it for like a year and they have to clean up the road quarterly, or how does that work exactly?
Councilmember Nicholson, they adopt the road for 2 years. So the neat thing also in the program is, so every quarter they had to come meet us again. We'd give them their pickups and their vests. Well, now we've decided, thank you. We're going to give them the tools, and they're done. They're done for the year. So we will say hi. We will visit them. If they call us at any time, we're there. But literally, they pick up the road for 2 years. And they can continually renew it.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
If I may, just to close this out, also give Amy and the entire team, this team, a lot of thanks and again recognize Richard. I mentioned at our last meeting his award for the development of this program and the integration to Cartograph, and now you see why. And just to remind and to let our community know that we've been doing this process improvement initiative that we've called Peak Performance internally for almost 4 years. It's something that I started shortly after I was appointed town manager. And it was by design, something that I wanted people, I wanted our departments and our employees to embrace slowly so that it became a part of a culture. And I am really, really happy to tell you this evening that it is a part of our culture and that we have, I think we'll have over 50 employees by the end of the year with the what's called the Green Belt certification for process improvement here, and that's all voluntary on their part. And the things that they're doing are just tremendous. And so we're really proud to be bringing some of these to you periodically so that you can also do what you're doing now, which is gush over them, and to thank them for their work and to encourage them for to continue to do, as I like to say, we call these, we're finding fingers and toes and arms and legs. Because you're not necessarily going to find, the time of an entire position or something like that, but it frees up their time to do other priorities. So I want to congratulate my team. They've been working very hard on this and with leadership all over. So thank you for the opportunity to share that with you and with our community this evening.
You bet, Ms. Jacob. Thank you, Amy, and please, we know some of your team is here tonight, but please extend our appreciation to all those that you identified early in your presentation. Mr. Standish, item two.
Presentation and discussion regarding the town's progress on implementing the Your Voice, Our Future general plan.
So the presentation for this item will be by Principal Planner Melanie Sims. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. So the purpose of this item, thank you as well. I haven't started yet, just getting started. Yay. Off to a great start. All right, so the purpose of this item is to present the town's progress in implementing the general plan, which is a very exciting item to present. So as you may be aware, the general plan is a long-range policy document guiding town through 2026. 3 years of extensive public outreach and participation resulted in 71% of the voters supporting the general plan. Several promises were made during this three-year period that are now reflected through the general plan's vision, goals, and policies. This annual progress report serves as a commitment to Oro Valley residents to deliver on those promises made. As we wrap up 2021, we are 1 year closer to the 2026 expiration date of this general plan. Preliminary prep work for the next general plan will actually begin early next spring, if you can believe it. So this report not only provides transparency in the town's ability to implement general plans, but it will also serve as a critical foundation to the next general plan. So the general plan includes goals and policies to support the community's long-range vision for the town. It also includes 310 measurable and specific actions that were created to bridge the gap between policy and implementation. The actions are divided into three sections, community, environment, and development, which I'll describe a little bit later in my presentation. These actions were also intended to be prioritized and evolve based on the community's needs and funding. As such, major actions are prioritized every 2 years through the town council's adopted strategic leadership plan. So where are we with this general plan? Well, to date, there have been three strategic leadership plans prioritizing actions and needs from this general plan. Two more strategic leadership plans will be based on the general plan to provide a further guidance and direct resources on all the remaining actions. So I am pleased to report that to date, 95% of the 310 action items are either being maintained through staff's daily routine, worked on, or completed. This represents a 3% increase from last year and is also cumulative of all the work done since 2016. However, this year's update focuses on the 91 active items. These are items that were incomplete from last year. And as shown on your screen, the remaining actions are almost evenly distributed through those three categories. The 38 community actions are focused on creating a complete community, a robust economy, and safe environment for all. Environmental actions focus on both natural and cultural resources, whereas development actions focus on land use and infrastructure. Key projects were completed in each category this year, which includes the town's ongoing effort to maintain actions. Additionally, several actions are being pursued for completion within the general plan's timeframe. So this year, there are 38 of the remaining 91 actions were completed, evaluated, or maintained. Some examples of notable achievements include completing major projects such as the Park and Recreation Master Plan and updating the Drainage Criteria Manual, both of which completed several of the general plan action items. Key economic development efforts were also maintained. This includes the Business Retention and Expansion Program, Ower Valley Safe Steps, and even completing an entrepreneurial needs study that was recently done to further recruit and retain talent in Ore Valley. Several actions are maintained over year through ongoing partnerships. This includes collaborating with other jurisdictions, coordinating resources with stakeholders in the greater, such as the Greater Ore Valley Chamber of Commerce and the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance, and making sure environmental resources are conserved, pedestrian connectivity is increased, and gathering spaces are fostered. Again, the focus of this report is only on the 91 active items, but I do want to let you know that there are over 100 action items that are maintained every year through several departments, including Ore Valley Police Department and the Finance Department, and more. So out of the 91 remaining active items, 36 are headed towards completion through several key projects. The majority of these actions were prioritized through the current strategic leadership plan. I'm not going to go through all of those listed on the screen, and those are just examples of some of the ones being worked on, but I do want to touch on a couple key items that may be of interest. So many of our community members have participated in neighborhood meetings for the Ore Valley Marketplace. The owners of the marketplace are requesting a mixed-use concept to revitalize the center, and to date, the application has been submitted and reviewed by staff with public hearings that will begin in this winter. Several code amendments are also being worked on. This includes a lighting code update, of which staff is participating in regional efforts with Pima County to update codes based on new technologies and opportunities to control light pollution and balance with public safety. Once this regional effort is established, recommendations to change the town's code will be brought to council for consideration. Another major project aligned with the strategic leadership plan is the broadband plan, creating strategies to expand services throughout the town. Significant progress has been made on this plan this year, and is anticipated to be completed in March 2022. The housing study is also timely, as it will not only satisfy the current general plan and strategic plan items, but also provide the critical foundation for including a housing element in the next general plan. Per state law, once a jurisdiction's population reaches 50,000 people, the general plan must address housing. The town of Ore Valley is projected to meet this by 2030. However, the completion of the housing study is dependent on the release of the most up-to-date data from the census. Unfortunately, and due to many jurisdictions' surprise, the census data rollout has been delayed several times due to COVID-19 and other circumstances. Data that is critical to completing the housing study is anticipated to be released throughout the next year. This includes both demographic and housing data, some of which, like occupancy and vacancy characteristics, will have a major impact to the study's findings and recommendations. Staff has completed preliminary work necessary, though, in preparation for the census data release. Lastly, the number of items remaining decreased this year from 24 to 17. These items are those that are yet to be evaluated, completed, or maintained. These projects are larger and more complex in nature, requiring additional resources such as funding or consultants. Again, the actions are intended to evolve based on resources and the community's needs. Therefore, all of these items are recommended for a future strategic leadership plan to gain more direction and allocate resources to complete. So in conclusion, the annual report provides transparency to the community of the town's progress in implementing the general plan. As we get closer to 2026, the report also plays a significant foundation to prepare for the next general plan, which must be ratified in 2026. To date, 95% of the 310 actions have been completed, maintained, or are headed towards completion. Staff will continue to work on the projects in progress, many of which, again, are aligned with the strategic leadership plan. And again, we recommend the remaining 17 items to be considered for future strategic plans. I want to invite everybody to read the Your Voice, Our Future General Plan, which is available online along with this progress report. And this concludes my presentation, and I, as well as other town staff, are available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sims. We'd open it at this time and would welcome any questions from council. Council Member Bowen.
Ms. Sims, thank you for all of your efforts. And I'd like to note that we report on the progress at the first meeting in December, and the last time we reported was about a year ago. Can you share with us what your department would do internally during the year to monitor progress on the general plan? For example, how many times do you get together to see how well we're doing on our general plan progress?
Mr. Mayor, Councilman Bowen, thank you for that question. So largely the projects that are in process, they are, especially those aligned with the strategic leadership plan, we do quarterly updates to kind of check everybody's progress and see where we are. And then we begin this update actually about August, September of every year. So getting together with everybody, seeing where we are, seeing what needs to be done prior to December, what is being wrapped up. So you'll see that some of them, they are anticipated for completion in November or completed in November. And that's not in any way to get it done before December, but it's just making sure we're all on the same page so it's updated accurately.
Other questions?
Okay. Follow up. And as a council member, I greatly appreciate that the planning department works on the items that are in the strategic plan that we put together. But could you describe how you determine the other priorities? Because I know we don't give you direction in the strategic plan on everything to work on. How do you prioritize the other open items that, you know, this is what I'm going to work on 2021 and this is what I'm going to work on 2022 and so on?
Sure. Mayor Renfield, Councilmember Bowen. So with the strategic leadership plan, that definitely directs department work plan, And so for like planning, for instance, we also have a work plan that we prioritize the strategic plan items first. And then from there, we look at other items that are outstanding that may be a timely item to complete at this time with the resources we have.
Thank you.
That's for our department. I wouldn't want to speak for all the other departments, though.
Other questions, comments? Ms. Sims, I know that the planning department is the face of the general plan, but of course all the departments of the town contribute significantly to moving these items forward, and we appreciate your work and Ms. Jacobs, all of the staff members help with these that are working on these 310 actions. So thank you so much. We appreciate your time this evening.
Thank you all.
We'll move to the consent agenda. Councilmember Bowen has asked that items F and G be pulled from the consent agenda. I would like to make a motion to approve items A through E of the consent agenda. Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Councilmember Bowen, I'll give you the floor for items F and G.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Regarding item F, it reads resolution number R21-59, approving the town's legislative agenda protocols, guiding the town's priorities for the 2022 legislative session and any lobbying activities. And the question I have for the town manager is, why do we do this? What is the benefit to Oro Valley for having this item? I know notice that we have it most years, but not every year. Can you share with us why this benefits us?
Certainly, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I think that's a really good question. I'm going to do a general answer, and then I'm going to turn it over to Assistant Town Manager Chris Cornelison. He's our legislative coordinator for the town. Basically, in a nutshell, the legislative session moves very quickly, and there are lots of bills that make their way through the process. In order to get the direction from council that, if necessary, the town should be weighing in on a particular bill, either pro or con, we bring forward this sort of broad legislative agenda so that there is agreement on these major issues, so we don't have to come back to you, because with your council meetings every other week, it could be that we'll get a call from the legislative director at the Arizona League of Cities and Towns, and they'll say, hey, we need you to call your legislator on XYZ bill because this is a really bad bill. Or, hey, we want this one to move forward. And so we do it under the authority that you're granting in the legislative agenda. Otherwise, we'd have to be coming back all the time. And so that's really the primary reason behind it. But I'm going to let Mr. Cornelison weigh in just a bit more.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. That's really the crux of it, is to be able to have some guidance from a staff perspective. Last year, we saw 1,774 pieces of legislation dropped within usually the first 2 to 3 months, and that's a lot of legislation. And so it helps a lot of our departments. So a lot of our departments and staff are involved in their own respective professional organizations, and so they use those as some of their lobbyist activities. We would like to have some kind of general areas or focus areas from town council to make sure that we are on the right path of what you all envision and for us to spend our time on. We did used to spend a lot more time on these legislation bills. I do work very closely with the mayor, who is also the legislative liaison for the town council on a lot of these issues. And so we're very selective on the items that we do spend our time on, because we just don't have that bandwidth. We don't have a designated staff person who is a legislative affairs person. That's usually me. We rely on the mayor a lot too in meeting with a lot of those state and local representatives. So that's really it, is to help give us some kind of an area. And just to expand a little bit on what Town Manager Jacob said in regards to, what's the point? They're kind of broad. We do recognize that. It was either 2 or 3 years ago the state legislature actually proposed a piece of legislation that, because we are an arm of the state, that would prohibit cities and towns from actually speaking with a legislator regarding a specific or any piece of legislation. So you're a staff member or a lobbyist, you could not do that unless you got specific authority from your respective town council. With 1,500 plus bills dropped in 2 to 3 months, I love you all, but I don't think we all want to see that much of each other meeting constantly. And it was understood that something such as a legislative agenda would actually give us enough guidance from our elected body to be able to still have those conversations if a piece of legislation like that were to be enacted.
Thank you. In doing a quick search on our town website for the term legislative agenda, I was able to find out that we had done something similar to this in 2015 and 16, couldn't find anything for 17 and 18, found items for 19, 20, and 21. And what was interesting about those five items that I had seen was they were virtually identical to each other, other than changing the date. And this year I saw something new, and it was the mentioning of specific issues that we would lobby for. And I was wondering, Chris, if you could give us a little bit of enlightenment on why there would be changes for this year when we hadn't changed anything for 5 years previously.
Absolutely, Councilmember Bowen. The reason you see a change this year is because I spent a little extra time on the legislative agenda and the resolution, and it was fairly confusing, especially in regards to what are we really going to be focusing on. So there are items in the paragraph below the one that we put these into that add things like transportation, public services to residents, I think land use, et cetera. And so what we did was we moved it up into the previous whereas section, and we wanted to be very clear, especially to you all, what exactly are it, so you don't have to read through and paragraph after paragraph, and we want to make it more clear. In working with the mayor, these items are reflective of a lot of our departments and how we, and what is recognizable more to you, such as, you know, Parks and Recreation Department, Public Works, transportation obviously falls within Public Works, public safety, and so also in addition, these are also the areas where we receive the most legislation that is either concerning to us or that we want to spend the most time working with our legislators on. Is that?
Thank you for that extra information. Was water considered? That was what jumped out at me when I read this list and I didn't see water on it.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I think previously we have included water historically. It's kind of encapsulated in the last bullet, the catch-all, as in any others that might impact the town or residents, and that gave us a little bit more flexibility in terms of that.
If I could also, Public Works was included, and Public Works certainly in general has roads and bridges, stormwater, water, I think could be considered under that umbrella. And so in some ways, the intent, there was actually a longer list. It seemed appropriate to do some consolidation, again, just for simplification and to align it with the strategic leadership plan with the various departments. And so that was part of the rationale.
And thank you to the mayor and to the assistant town manager. That clarification helps me very much in being able to approve this.
Thank you. And then there was item G, Councilmember Bowen.
Why don't we go ahead and vote on F, keep the two separate.
Okay, sure. I move to approve item F of the consent agenda.
Second. I second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion passes 7-0. So Councilmember Bowen, you have the floor for item G.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Item G reads, resolution number R21-60, delegating authority to the town manager and or her designee to terminate the existing deferred compensation plan administered by ICMA Retirement Corporation, now known as Mission Square Retirement, and directing the town manager and her appropriate staff to proceed and take action necessary to acquire an appropriate deferred compensation plan in accordance with procurement rules and laws. And as I read the staff report that was prepared to answer my questions, and thank you very much to the staff for answering them promptly, it really helped. I saw a disconnect between what I interpreted from the agenda item as to how we would work with Mission Square and in the answer to question 7 in the report. And I just requested some clarification from the assistant town manager on the timeline. Should we move forward in an effort to find a better solution and secure new bids, how does the contract with Mission Square work? When is it terminated and why?
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, thank you for the question. To clarify, as part of the procurement process, our chief procurement officer would coordinate with either the incumbent, if we were to select and do a new contract, on when those new terms, assuming there would be new terms, would take into effect. If it is a new organization or company, our chief procurement officer will also draft, as part of that new contract, when such date in the future. As part of that conversation and coordination, staff will also coordinate with the incumbent on when we would terminate services. The current contract, although it doesn't have a date specific, it has a 30 or 60 day termination clause, and so we would time that with any new contract. I just want to make sure that I address your question.
We have a long history with Mission Square at this point. I think it's approximately 30 years. Have we had any major problems?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, no, we have not had any major problems.
Regarding the cost benefit of seeking out a new deferred compensation provider, have we had any time to kind of look at that, to see what we would propose to benefit from going with the new provider? I understand completely the possibility of wanting to look and see what the options for Oral Valley are. What I thought was a little bit lacking in the preparation for this meeting was some discussion of here's the costs and benefits of doing this. And do we have any insight into that right now?
Sure, Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, that would come out as part of the RFP process to receive all the proposals and understand what the market conditions are really applying for us. We do know that the city of Tucson recently went through that process, and we have been in conversations with them as part of those efforts, and they did select a new administrator, benefits administrator, last year in 2020. And so as part of some conversations with them, Scottsdale has also recently done that, I think, 3 years ago, in which they ended up finding a new provider as well. And so in conversations with them, as well as some investment consultants, the market is a lot more competitive, and so that's what we would expect in terms, and that's what we found and from conversations with others who have gone through a similar process recently.
Can I interpret that, you know, not having major problems with Mission Square, that would include things like, you know, security breaches or, you know, really bad news from them? And that's what I was driving at and why I wasn't necessarily in a position where I felt like I could approve this as a consent agenda item. There seems to be a lot of merit in the idea, but there also are a lot of missing details for me. And I would consider a 30-year track record where the town manager and the assistant town manager come back to council and say, well, we haven't had any major problems. I think that's something that speaks well for Mission Square, and that's why I would vote against this on the consent agenda, not because the idea doesn't have merit, but there's just not enough evidence for me to see why a change is justified given the possible risks of going with the new provider. So I just wanted to let the council know I won't be voting in favor of this, but I don't necessarily think it's a poor idea, but rather I think it's more important than urgent, and I'd like to see a lot more information before I vote in support.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon?
My understanding is that this does not automatically terminate the current provider. It simply allows us to produce an RFP and go out in the competitive market to see if we can gain some additional benefits financially and service-wise for our employees. So therefore, I think it's a good idea, particularly since it's been 30 years. We know that local municipalities have done it to positive effects. And as I said, this is not punishing the current contract holder. And in fact, we'll give them the opportunity to respond to the RFP just as well as any other potential provider.
Councilmember Green and then Vice Mayor Barrett.
To me, this represents due diligence by the administrative staff, and we would want them to do this periodically.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I'm generally in favor of going out for an RFP for things like this, but is what Councilmember Solomon said correct? Is there any protection for us in the event that our current contract ends up being more favorable than what we're able to obtain on open market through an RFP.
Thank you, Council Member, Vice Mayor Barrett. One way or another, we're recommending that we do an RFP process. And so an incumbent is likely to bid at least as good as what they're giving us now, and hopefully better. And that's really what we're looking for. We believe that there's some opportunities for an even better product. It may very well be with our current incumbent, but it will be a new contract, assuming the council moves forward with this. It will be a new, the previous contract will close, and a new contract would be awarded, whether it's with the incumbent or another provider.
Vice Mayor Barron.
Can I ask a follow-up question? What is the sentiment, if any, that you've received from our employees regarding this opportunity?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor. So we did a recent survey for town employees, and I believe it was 54% are interested in their financial wellness. As part of our health and wellness program, we have heard that staff are being more in tune and involved in regards to their investments. There are certain things that we certainly want to continue to build upon, such as more education regarding a variety of different investing options and explaining that.
Thank you. Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I do believe that it is doing due diligence by putting out an RFP. It's been 30 years, and in 30 years, things definitely change. Think 30 years ago, wow, Jesus, I'm not going to even tell you how old I was, but things change. Services change.
You were in nursing
change.
School 30 years ago,
well,
weren't you?
Well, thank you. So I do believe that it's due diligence, and I strongly encourage us to do that. Take a look at what's out there that's going to offer us additional benefits to our employees. Excuse me.
Any additional questions, comments? Councilmember Bowen.
So just for clarification, were we to select a new provider, my confusion had been, I thought that the agenda item read that we would be canceling the contract with Mission Square at the beginning of the procurement process. That didn't seem right to me, but it's what I read, and that's what I was seeking clarification on. It's like, is that correct? Is the agenda item correct, or is the report response correct with terms of the contract?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, tonight's item would delegate the authority to the town manager to cancel the contract at an appropriate time within the procurement process, so not necessarily at the beginning.
So it's at an appropriate time within the procurement process?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. I entertain a motion. I move to approve item G of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed, nay?
Nay.
The motion passes 6-1. We'll go to the regular agenda. Item 1, Mr. Standish.
Nomination and election of Vice Mayor.
I'll open the floor to nominations.
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
I nominate Vice Mayor Melanie Barrett.
Okay. I'll second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
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 Motion passes 5-2. I will go to item 3, Mr. Standish.
Public hearing, ordinance number 021-11, discussion and possible action regarding a proposed zoning amendment to remove a zoning condition requiring a minimum lot size of 180,000 square feet to enable the standard R1-144 minimum lot size of 144,000 square feet for an area located in proximity to Tortolita Mountain Circle, North King Air Drive, and West Turtle Dove Lane, parcels 219-16001D, 219-16003A, 219-16005A, 219-16005B, 219-16007A, 219-16007B, 219-15001C, 219-15001D, 219-15001E, 219-15004-0, 219-15050, 219-15060, 219-16001B, 219-16020, 219-15007B, 219-15007C, 219-15007D, 219-16016A, 219-16016B, 219-16016C, 219-15009A, 219-15008A, 219-15008B, and 219-120160.
I didn't catch all those. Can we have the town clerk repeat it?
Mr. Standish, you earned your money tonight for that one. The presentation this evening will be by planner Kyle Packer.
I'd like to start with an apology to Standish for having to read all that. That is just a little bit much. As he said, my presentation tonight is for a proposed zoning amendment to enable the standard 144,000 square foot lot size for those listed parcels. I'll start just with the existing standards for this area, which is outlined in blue. There are the current standard is 180,000 square feet is the minimum lot size, and this is based on previous Pima County zoning. The proposed is 144,000 square foot minimum lot size based on the existing Oro Valley zoning these properties have. There are 24 properties with this zoning condition outlined in blue, and 10 are currently non-compliant, so I'll bounce back. These originally were highlighted in orange. It looks like something has happened with the presentation, but there are 10 of these properties that currently do not meet that 180,000 square foot minimum lot size. Instead, they are 144 or between. In regards to the location of these properties, they are within and adjacent to Stone Canyon, south and west of Tortolino Mountain Circle, and north of the La Cholla Air Park. These properties were annexed from Pima County in April of 2004. They were previously zoned Pima County Rural Homestead. This is where the 180,000 square foot minimum lot size originated. When land is annexed, state law requires it be translationally zoned to the most equivalent zoning of the new jurisdiction within 6 months. In this case, that zoning was R1-144, which has a standard minimum lot size of 144,000 square feet. During the translational zoning process, a condition requiring a minimum lot size of 180,000 square feet was applied. This was not requested by town council or by residents or neighbors of these properties. In March of 2004, the month before the translational zoning hearing, Pima County approved a lot split below 180,000 square feet in the area. After the translational zoning process, there were three lot splits below the 180,000 square foot zoning condition requirement. This is how we arrived at 10 legally non-compliant lots out of 24. Reducing the lot size from 180,000 square feet to 144,000 square feet allows more lots. However, even with this reduction, these properties remain within the rural low-density residential general plan designation in possible density. Meeting notice has been provided for tonight and all other meetings for this project. An informational video was provided online on September 27th, and letters of explanation were sent to the affected property owners. Six responded to show their support, one responded neutrally, and 10 did not respond. We held a neighborhood meeting on October 12th, and the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting November 2nd is the meeting where they recommended approval for this item. To provide the summary and recommendation, the 180,000 square foot minimum lot size was unnecessary. 10 out of the 24 properties do not meet this current minimum lot size. The removal of the condition applies the same standard as all other R1 144 properties in town. It does not remove property rights, and it conforms with the general plan. Therefore, the Planning and Zoning Commission recommends approval. Thank you. And if the town council has any questions at this time, me and other staff members are here to answer them.
Mr. Mayor?
Yeah, there is a public hearing associated with this agenda item. I'd like to open the public hearing at this time. I don't have blue cards, but if you'd like to speak to this item, this is your opportunity. Hearing none, I'll close the public hearing and now open it to council questions. Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, the RH zoning in Pima County has a 50-foot front and rear yard setback and a 20-foot side yard setback. What's our corresponding SR zoning front and side yard setbacks?
The setbacks for these two districts are the same, both in Pima County Rural Homestead as well as the current R1 144 standards.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Vice Mayor Barrett.
I just have a couple of questions about just some further information. I'm wondering if I could hear a little bit more about not just the legislative story, but the story and background about how we got here today. Was there a property owner who wanted to subdivide the property, or what brought this to our attention and brought it here today?
Absolutely, Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett. We discovered this through due diligence after we did receive an application for a subdivision of properties in this area. So we went back through and found that there was a zoning condition, a translational zoning condition in particular, that prevented the proposed subdivision from occurring, and we discovered that numerous others had occurred over the course of this property's annexation into the town.
So that brings me to my next question. If in future these properties will be subdivided, if at all, which it sounds like they will be, what is the process that they would go through in order to be subdivided?
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, they will go through the standard process for the subdivision process. It's an it's a administrative process, I believe. Perhaps Planning and Zoning Administrator Vella can provide a little bit more context of that full process. However, I will turn it over to him.
Sure. Very briefly, Council, Vice Mayor, there are two different subdivision processes, if you will. One's a minor, and one, for ease, I'll call the regular process. Minor is if you're only making making three or fewer splits. Two splits can be administratively approved. Splits beyond that must come before a commission and town council for review and approval. So the case that actually triggered that research that Mr. Packer referred to was for a regular subdivision that will, if it goes forward, come to commission and council. But really, I just want to punctuate that pre-application led to what I thought was extraordinary work by Mr. Packer to really dig into the history of this area. And the more we pulled that string, we started finding issues for current property owners who innocently found themselves in the position of being a legal nonconforming parcel. So this action remedies that for some, I think it is 10 property owners. And it also creates one thing that is a very important legal principle in zoning, and that's creating uniformity of zoning. That is exactly what we're trying to do, is make this R144 district the same as all R144 districts in Oro Valley. The same standard, 144,000 square feet, no more, no less. So that's the principle. I hope that helps.
Thanks. I understand that. So the pending pre-application that will require potentially commission and council approval would divide these 180,000 square foot lots into the 144,000 square foot lots?
Mayor,
is that what we're kind of trying to get at here?
Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett, the specific application that we're discussing is for a property that I believe is some 25 acres as a proposal. So it's multiple parcels in this area that wouldn't, they are not currently 180,000 square feet. They're a combined 25, I think, between two or three parcels. And the proposal there would be to subdivide them into seven lots that are below the 180,000 square feet, but above the 144,000 square feet minimum lot size.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any additional questions?
Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Green.
I would like to move to approve ordinance number 021-11, a zoning amendment to apply the standard R1 144 minimum lot size of 144,000 square feet to the affected parcels listed in our attachment 2, based on the finding it is in compliance with the general plan.
I'll second.
Second.
Also, Councilmember Bowen had a question, and I don't want to preempt
apologize.
That.
Yeah.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Kyle, I noticed in the final bullet before the major bullet that we mentioned that this proposal conforms with the general plan. Mm-hmm. Can you take us through the analysis that is done to determine that this, in fact, does conform with our general plan?
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, absolutely. This is really the only issue on the table here is the lot size. And within the general plan, these properties have a zoning designation or a general plan use designation of rural low density residential, which has a standard of 0 to, I believe it's 3.3, or rather one third of a home per acre. And so when we perform the analysis to verify, it's at the maximum density that these properties could be built under that new standard, it still would need to meet that general plan designation, and it does, in fact, do that.
Would it be fair to say it conforms with the general plan land use map, not necessarily the goals and policies, but these are identified in the land use map as R144, and we're moving to R144. Therefore, if we do this, we're in accordance with the map.
Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, there is a there's a distinction between the general plan land use map and zoning. The general plan land use map has separate categories that do not distinctly connect to zoning. However, it would be reasonable to state that the general plan land use map is what we're analyzing or comparing these properties to ensure that they comply in that sense.
And thank you, Kyle. What I'm getting at is, did we do any sort of review of the general plan, the goals and policies, to see if this, in fact, conforms more or less with the goals and policies of the general plan? And what I want us to always be careful of is there are so many goals and policies in the general plan that you can almost certainly find one or two of them that any proposal agrees with. But what I've found is there are a number of goals and policies that are possibly contradictory or achieve different aims. And whenever I see something that says conforms with the general plan, I'm very interested in what a person's thought process is. This is why I think that it conforms with the general plan. So was there a review of the goals and policies with respect to this change to see if it meets more goals and policies than it contradicts, or was that perhaps not necessarily done?
Absolutely. Mayor Winfield, Councilmember Bowen, that analysis was done. To your point, there's a lot of ways to analyze a different project or even the same project. However, this does, similar to the other properties in the area and other rural low-density general plan designated areas, when we examine the uses of those areas across the town, we do see them to be in conformance with how the proposed land uses would occur for these properties given the R1 144 zoning designation and the minimum lot size applied for those.
Thank you. That's my question.
So So there is a motion on the table. The motion was made by Councilmember Green, seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. I'm not trying to end the discussion, but is there any more questions? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The motion passes 7-0. Kyle, thank you for your presentation tonight.
Thank you very much, Town Council.
Mr. Standish, item 4.
Discussion and possible direction to audio and video record board and commission meetings.
Thank you. This item was requested by Councilmember Bowen and seconded by myself. This was an item at our meeting 2 weeks ago. Our Chief Information Officer, Chuck Boyer, presented this item. It included options of live streaming of audio and video and recording for all boards and commissions and the associated costs with that, location of video and enabled conference rooms, and website meeting list. I neglected at the outset of this to give the floor to Councilmember Bowen. And Councilmember Bowen, my apologies for that. I'd certainly turn the floor over to you for this this item, or to add to what I've just said.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. From the meeting minutes of October 6th, 2021, the first future agenda item is Councilmember Bowen requested a future agenda item to discuss the possibility of having audio and video available for all board and commission meetings held in the council chambers, and this was seconded by Mayor Winfield. The intent of this agenda item was very specific. It was locked into a single room, which is this room, the council chambers, which is well equipped with multiple video screens and the capabilities we see at the back of easily recording the meeting. And the second key element of this item, which I think might have been missed the last time that we discussed it, was in no way was I suggesting that we would have mandatory live streaming of meetings, but rather my goal, and I would hope that I could get support from a majority of the council on this, would be that it's always a good idea to have a video recording of any meeting that takes place in the council chambers, particularly a meeting in which we present PowerPoints on a screen, which just simply can't be seen or understood well when you only have an audio recording. So I was hoping we could get back to that point. What I'm seeking support for is very simply not a technical solution tonight, but rather the idea that I think it's a very good idea that we have a policy to record video for any meeting, commission or council meeting that takes place in this room, keep the video and keep the audio and make it available on the town website, on the page where people expect to go to see the videos. And therefore, if anyone wants to understand how we arrived at a decision or what a commission said, it's right there for them. They don't have to try to interpret via the audio only. Rather, they can watch the meeting as it happened.
Thank you, Councilmember Bowen. So this item was continued, and there were some legal questions that were raised. Mr. Rothschild, could you speak to those?
So the law in Arizona is that a public meeting requires notice and an open meeting, and it also requires that all public bodies shall provide for the taking of written minutes or a recording of all their meetings, and that recording could be by audio or video. So it's really at the council's discretion and or posting on the website. So it's really at the council's discretion as to how much they want to do. You could choose to do nothing. I think Councilmember Bowen's suggestion is that without, in some cases, video, you can't really tell always what's going on at the meeting. The one exception to that under state law is that subcommittees and advisory committees are exempt from this requirement. So it's really just those committees who have authority to come to council, and not the subcommittees or advisory committees. And I think that answer. There's one other I think relevant thing here. The town of Oro Valley's rules require written minutes be taken and that meetings shall be recorded, and that meetings shall be recorded by means of audio or video technology. So again, it's not necessary that you do that for all groups, but you must do either audio or video for all meetings. And I think that should cover it.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy. Thank you, Mr. Rothschild.
Mr. Rothschild, I need a point of clarification. You said that if the committee is playing an advisory role to council, then we need to have video or video or written?
Subcommittees and advisory committees are exempt from the requirement. Okay. So you could choose to video every meeting, okay? You do not have to audio or video subcommittees or advisory committees. And again, it may come down to some extent, an issue of logistics, what rooms have what abilities, and so that would become a scheduling issue if you said we have to video every meeting. But I think Councilmember Bowen's suggestion was that there be an upgrade to some extent on how those are documented. But under any circumstance, you do need to obviously do all the open meeting requirements, keep minutes, and audio or video all meetings in Oro Valley. That's your rules. But it's not, you don't have to video them all, but you have to either video or audio them all.
Another question: do we have any committees right now that are considered subcommittees or advisory committees?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, we do have a few subcommittees. For example, the Water Utility Commission has a finance subcommittee that reviews rates. There are some that might happen on a case by case or a short term basis. And so we do not need to video or audio these. But I think the question that came up at the conclusion of your conversation was just, hey, before you say only those in the council chambers, let's just double check that we have that ability to do something different for ones that are in the Hopi room and the water conference room. And the legal analysis is, yes, you can.
My other question is for those committees that meet here, can this be done? Can we go ahead and record them and have audio and video?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, yes. We will need to make an investment in this chambers in order to allow our vendor to be able to video those meetings. But yes, absolutely, we can do that. And, pending council direction, we'll get started on that process.
Do we have any different numbers on how much this is going to cost us from the original presentation?
Council member, yes, we do. I'm going to ask our chief information officer, Mr. Boyer, to come forward. He did get some clarification from the vendor on what will be required.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, we updated the quote. So for the standard meetings that happen here within chambers, the O&M would decrease by $20,000. So basically, we'd be looking at $10,000 a year for the maintenance of the recordings.
Councilmember Solomon and then Vice Mayor Barrett.
Question for staff. So, I mean, it seems like a reasonable thing to do is to just schedule and hold all our board and commission meetings in the council chambers. Is there any stumbling block to that scheduling? I know that, for example, the ones I'm a liaison to, they meet on a certain day at a certain time, but if that didn't work on those just be changed in, you know, like 60 or 90 days once they coordinate with all the commission members and town staff scheduling?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, we can certainly do what we can to squeeze more board and commission members in here. The challenge is that you basically have five evenings a week, and one is dedicated to the council, and we reserve Wednesdays for in the event that council decides to have a study session. So I would hate to kick out a commission if they were regularly being scheduled in here on an opposite Wednesday. The other is not many boards and commissions are interested in wanting to meet on a Friday night. So that really leaves you with three evenings and that in multiple weeks. And so we can certainly look at how many we can squeeze in, when, and we'll take a look at that. But for example, you know, the Water Utility Commission, I think, is very comfortable in their conference room. We might want to take a look at which ones have, you know, more attendance, get more of the PowerPoints, you know, that sort of thing, as we pick and choose which ones, because they'll all be audioed, and so there will be a recording for all of them, no matter what. That will continue, but certainly we'll take a look at that and see what we can do.
Councilmember Green.
I'm certainly for maximum transparency, and I think both audio and visual is a good way to deal with that. The question I have is, do we have any data on how often people are accessing what we have in terms of stored meetings and so forth? You have anything on that, Chuck?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Green, I do not.
I'm sorry, Vice Mayor Barrett.
We can run some numbers. We can pull some analytics for you and share that with you. I know in the normal analytics that we do for the website as a whole, we don't get a lot of hits on that particular page, so it never comes up to the, doesn't move up to the top, so to speak. So if I had to venture, I guess I would say, you know, it wouldn't be a lot. But I think the point is that when people do want to take a look at it, they want to be able to follow along. And I think that's a fair assessment.
I like the concept. I just wanted to see if there was any data to help support it. That's all. Thank you. Thanks, Jeff.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. I appreciate this and like the concept. And I think that $10,000 would be well worth it for that improvement in transparency and accessibility to our meetings. I have a couple sort of tangential questions. First, about advisory boards. We do have some boards and commissions that are titled advisory boards, such as the Parks and Rec Advisory Board. So do we need to have some kind of policy that makes it clear that we also expect those meetings to be either video or audio recorded? And that may be a question for Mr. Rothschild.
I will jump in and say that we do audio the Parks and Rec Advisory Board. And so that's already a given. We basically treat them as a board or commission, as one of our main boards and commissions. It might be worthwhile looking at retitling them at some point in the future to a commission. we can also move them in here if that's council's desire.
Okay, thanks. And then my other question is kind of, Councilmember Bowen talked about the agenda item being audio and video available for all boards and commission meetings. Is there anything we can do to retroactively include recordings of meetings that have been held over the last year or so via Zoom that were recorded to make those more readily available that we do have video recording for because they were held online?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, are you referencing the ones outside of council meetings?
Yes, the board and commission meetings that were held on Zoom.
Yes.
And even the neighborhood meetings. Is there any way to make those recordings available to the public?
We can look to see which recordings we still have, and we can get them uploaded retroactively, those that we have recordings for.
Okay, thank you. I would appreciate including that. If we have that, you know, then I'd love to preserve that while we have that resource available.
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor, would you mind if we looked into that further and also assess the kind of staff time and what it would take for that to happen before we make a firm commitment to do that? And we'll circle back with you.
Yeah, that sounds good. And then my other thought was about finding these meetings. It can be a little bit difficult to find the meetings on the website if you don't know where to look or how to search for them. And it's also difficult to find what topics were discussed. So, I mean, maybe this should go more in future agenda items, but I'll just posit, as we make these available, I don't know if there's any way to look at those kind of peak process improvements and things like that, if there's any tags that can be applied to the meeting or ways to search them so that we can increase the data and the usage like Councilmember Green was commenting on, so you know people can more readily access them. Because if we're going to put in the investment into making them available to the public, then I think it also makes sense to take a look at what could make them more easily accessed, more easily searched. Because I know when I've searched for meetings, sometimes I have to go date by date to look for the meeting and in the agenda item to find the meeting that I'm looking for. And so I think correspondingly to moving forward with doing this audio and video recording, it would be helpful to try and make it as accessible for our public as possible to help increase their utilization. That's just a thought.
Vice Mayor, we certainly will take a look at that. We are, as Mr. Boyer mentioned at the last meeting, we're a little beholden to our vendor for this. And so there is a button right on our front page that says meetings and agendas, and then we have to follow the format that they provide us in terms of where that video and audio lives. But I think we have it as clear as we can in terms of by meeting and then by date and, you know, that sort of thing. But I hear you. We'll take a look at that and see if we can make some improvements.
Right. It's just difficult to search by topic. So say you're a person who wants to come in and do a news article, or you want to find out more information about golf in Oro Valley. You know, there's no real way to go through it other than look through all the dates and the agendas. And when I was doing research on other municipalities' websites, you could type in the term and it would pull up all the council reports and all the meetings and all the PowerPoint presentations that related to that item. So it was just much easier to find that particular topic. Or if I want to find out about the Parks and Rec Master Plan, you know, I can't just type in Parks and Rec Master Plan and get access to all the video meetings that correspond to that. So I think that's kind of my point. I'm aware of how to navigate it, but it's difficult for the public. And so I think we could increase utilization. I don't want to get too far off topic, but it's just kind of my thought about increasing the utilization if we do make the investment.
Certainly, we'll definitely take a look. We're again, a little beholden to our website vendor for that. Some other communities spend a lot more money annually on their website management and maintenance than we do. And so we have to use the search engine that they provide us in the system as a whole. But we'll definitely talk to them about how we might be able to optimize our search engine.
And just to clarify, just to touch more, it's simply because it's two different vendors. And so the search engine within our website cannot look within another vendor's website for content. So even though for us, in our eyes, it's right there, it's a completely different one. Otherwise, I mean, that's what Google does, right? So Google looks across everything. Our website vendors look specifically within the website content, and our meetings and agendas and everything is within a different vendor's website.
Councilmember Bowen, would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move to establish an Oro Valley Town policy to record and archive video and audio on the town website for all commission meetings and council meetings held within the town council chambers.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Discussion?
Mr. Mayor.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I'd like to ask Councilmember Bowen if he could amend his motion to include boards and commission meetings, because some are labeled commission meetings and some are labeled boards.
Yes, I can. I would ask the clerk, do I need to reread the motion?
No, I think we got it as is. Yep, thank you.
And I'd give the second for that as well.
Okay. Any Councilmember Jones-Ivy, did you have a question? No. Any questions, discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion passes 7-0. Future agenda items? Okay. Hearing none, I move to adjourn.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. All in favor, say aye.
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 Motion passes 7-0. I think we'll take a 10-minute break and then return for the study session. The study session to order. The study session is called to order. Mr. Standish, if you would read item one of the study session, please.
Discussion of action item number 135 from the Your Voice, Our Future General Plan regarding the housing inventory study.
This item was requested by Councilmember Bowen and Councilmember Nicholson. I'm going to turn the floor over to Councilmember Bowen and Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had requested this item previously. While it's unusual to ask for a study session on a single general plan action item, as there are hundreds of action items, I think this action item is particularly significant in Oral Valley. When we talk about housing in Oral Valley, it generates a lot of interest, whether it's water, traffic, or how it impacts our neighbors' property values, or how the nature of the community might be impacted. People get very, very interested. And I had noted that we had reached a milestone in action item 135 late in December of 2020, last year, wherein we completed an apartment study that was the first component to completing action item 135. So in introducing this, I had a couple of questions for staff, and the first one is very general in nature, and that is, How does having a housing study, such as what will be created by the completion of action item 135, how does it benefit our town staff in being more effective in your jobs? What will we use the housing study for?
Councilmember Bowen, members of the commission, that's a great question. I really, as a professional planner, a strong advocate for doing a housing study, and we're eager to get one done expeditiously. The way it benefits a community, and this has been actually recognized by the state legislature, that once you get to be a certain size, that knowing your demographic and ensuring that it matches up with the housing stock that's being provided, analyzing that and making deriving policy from that specific analysis so that we can set up zoning that targets where the town wants to go, as defined in the general plan and the leadership of the town council. So again, I strongly assert that it's foundational in terms of taking Oro Valley where it should go, wherever that may be, in terms of making sure that we're not only serving one niche, but also perhaps the special needs of senior populations, disabled populations, underrepresented populations. And really that it also sets us up for success relative to employment, attracting top talent to the town, et cetera, et cetera. So I really believe the benefits are wide and deep. And this is very, I agree with you entirely, this is very important, and we want to see that it gets done.
Thank you. When we reach 50,000 in population, how do the requirements on Oral Valley change in terms of our needing to have a housing study or a housing policy?
Member Bowen, members of the council, the state law actually lists very, in almost a checkbox fashion, what needs to be in a housing study to meet basic minimum requirements for the state. So, and certainly any study that we would incorporate. Thank you. What would I do without you, Ms. Sims? Thank you. The list, you know, and I could just prattle through it very quickly. It's short. Really focusing on substandard dwelling conditions, not particularly an issue in Oro Valley. Improvement of housing quality, variety and affordability, and provision for adequate sites for housing. Identifying and analyzing existing and forecasting housing needs. And then finally, equal provision for housing needs for all segments of the community. So those are all boxes to tick that we need to do as part of the general plan. That is not a limiting list, but it's a minimum list.
So. The ability to forecast is something that's near and dear to my heart. I know how hard it is to do in my own career and how challenging it is. How do you think this study could help you to help Oral Valley forecast for the future? Having this study in your hand, what type of forecasting might it enable that we can't do right now?
It really is about identifying gaps. You know, where are the missing spots we have in our community relative to, again, serving niche needs? And what can we do from a policy and zoning perspective to line up with that? So, and I think, you know, having that data not only serves this council immediately, it's also very much going to serve in come 2026. We pull citizen groups, resident groups together to form committees to work on policies for the general plan. We very much will have a team working on this very thing, and having this core source information is a vital starting point. So,
you've been with the town longer than I have, and I think a lot of our staff have. Have we ever had what we felt was a pretty complete and accurate housing inventory in the past?
In my estimation, no. We've had bits and pieces. But we've never had a comprehensive housing study. This would be the first.
And do you recall how this came into the general plan? Was this, you know, an idea, or was it the thought of having a housing study? Was it we need to comply with what Arizona needs us to do, and it would be great to have it in the general plan to make sure we don't forget?
Member Bowen, Council Member Bowen, members of the council, it was really not, the focus was not, hey, there's a box we're going to need to check someday. It really was realizing through all the neighborhood meetings, all the outreach meetings, the questions we do get about housing, many of the answers we're providing are can be either anecdotal or just based on preliminary research. We've never had anything comprehensive. So it really came from wanting to be more precise, and this is something that could well serve the town.
And this is my final question regarding the 2020 apartment study, which was completed last fall. In your view, how applicable will the data that we've collected thus far be at the time we finish the housing study, which is projected in 2023?
You know, that's one of those we'll see type questions, but, you know, I certainly, and this is my best judgment, that we're not going to see significant shifts in the findings, especially when you factor in that, you know we, by and large, we're in a range of 300 to 400 permits per year, and you can extrapolate in terms of what kind of population add that is. So, So I expect those findings to be similar. But again, I don't want to prejudge what a consultant might find in the future.
Councilmember Green.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. It seems my only experience with this is trying to plan health care for a state of Massachusetts. And the information we needed to do that was, first of all, census data. We needed details on the people and the diseases, in other words, the demographics of that population. And to have done this study without having those, it wouldn't have been much help to us. So I guess my question is, how firm are the data that you have right now, and what can we do to get more solid data as we predict into the future?
Good question. Very good question, Member Green. Council, the answer is really in what we have today are projections. So PEMA Association of Governments, that works with all the jurisdictions in Southern Arizona, regularly has works on providing five-year projections based on trendline data. So these aren't hard numbers. These are super smart folks with algorithms projecting based on rates and permit data. And that's what we used for the apartment study. We used projections because we felt at that time it was very timely to get at least some data point, because these were questions we were being asked at neighborhood meetings, and we wanted to be able to provide a response. What we're waiting for, frustratingly so waiting for, is the real numbers, the hard numbers data from the census. So, and as you know, that timeline has been a bit erratic. Yes.
Thank you. Sure. Vice Mayor Barrett and Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Okay, thank you. How do you think that the housing study will be affected by potential reaching build-out as well as by potential annexations in the future?
So certainly, Vice Mayor Barrett, members of council, annexations, particularly state land to our west and to north, especially to the north, given that property size is roughly the same size as Rancho Vistoso, certainly could have an enormous impact. So certainly with those types of annexations, a housing study would absolutely have to be updated. But I think, you know, it's important also to take a look now, given the limited land supply, to make sure we're making good decisions that really reflect wanting to achieve a balance, if that's the direction of council policy-wise. And I think a housing study is, foundational to be able to do that.
So that kind of leads to my next question. Given the fact that we have limited land at the moment, pending future annexations of state land or something else, every choice of housing is a choice between the way land is currently zoned and the way that it could potentially be zoned for housing. So will a housing study provide more comprehensive information, like what the effect would be of reducing commercial land, what the effect would be of reducing employment land, et cetera?
So a key element in all of the housing studies we've reviewed, and we've looked at ones from both nationally, regionally, particularly ones in the Phoenix area, all have a very strong economic component, particularly linking with the retail rooftop equation.
But specifically, if your area for retail is replaced by housing, does it look at that?
I think I'm trying to get to the root of your question, because I think it's
where it hits that note is that looking at what we have in terms of retail, and I think the Oro Valley's situation, Oro Valley's a problem to solve again, and I think you've heard us as staff present this at various meetings, that there are many commercial corners that are underserved relative to rooftops, just raw numbers, in terms of being able to be successful. And so a housing study should delve into that. So there are areas, in my opinion, staff's professional opinion, that do warrant conversion. There are others that should not be converted. So, you know, a housing study would be helpful in pinpointing those areas. So, for example, you have a very healthy intersection, McGee and Oracle, very healthy intersection at Ina and Oracle. They have high traffic, they have high density, and they have good incomes. That's why those retailers are successful. You move to areas like Tangerine and Oracle, you've got very low density rooftops within the radius circles that retailers look at. The traffic numbers aren't high enough to compensate for that. So those are areas, and as well as Ranch Vistoso and Tangerine, those are areas that have issues relative to the basic metrics that retailers look for to be successful. And that's why it's no accident there are empty pads at those locations.
Sure, I understand. I guess
sure.
McGee and Ina don't really have empty land, so they're not really being considered for housing. That's kind of what I'm getting at. So if you replace employment land with housing, if you replace commercial land with housing, it'd be nice if the housing study didn't just say, here's what more housing does for you, but instead, what is the trade-off involved? And similarly, I mean, I'd be interested in it taking a look at how it's going to affect the town in terms of water. That's something Councilmember Bowen mentioned, as well as impacts on services that we provide, like our roads, police, parks, et cetera. So, I mean, that's something I think it would be good for a housing study to include.
Understood. And I really want to make it very clear that we heard loud and clear that when we do have a scope ready, that council would like input on it, and it will be put before you for consideration. And so hearing that is very helpful, but I want to make sure that everyone understands that we understand the scope is going to come back to you. So,
okay, so the timeline for that is 2023?
So there are two reasons we want to wait, or we should wait, to be effective and efficient about doing the study and accurate. So not only are we waiting for numbers and key categories, what we've also learned is they're not sure they're going to provide certain categories. So it's that loose right now with the Census Bureau. So we're leery of writing a final scope right now when we may not have those particular data points. Those are data points we feel strongly that should be in there. So so we think the smart, efficient, cost-effective method is we don't want to wait, but it is to wait.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question pretty much runs down the line of the Vice Mayor, and that is, given the limited amount of developable land that we still have, and trying to balance that with commercial and varying types of housing, are we going to be looking at the trends of, like, our elderly people who are already in homes and what kind of housing they would be interested in? I know that we have a lot of retirement, like Splendido and a few of the others. But are we going to be looking at what's going to be less costly also? Because as our population age, you're dealing with so many, you know, health-related aspects. And not everyone can go to a Splendido or some of the other high-end places, but they might want to maintain a residence here, but just something a little bit smaller. So I'm hoping we'll look at issues like that.
Yes, Councilmember Ivy, you're bringing up a great point. Multi-generational housing is absolutely going to be a significant component in making sure that we're providing for that. Regionally, the city of Tucson has made some really big strides in that specific area, including being a lot more flexible with guest houses and allowing kitchens in guest houses and whatnot so that you can have a full independent living suite for parents that want to age with their families. So there are very specific niche housing types that need and should be looked at. So, and then and if out of that housing study and that analysis, and if that's an area council wants to go in terms of policy and also through the work on the next general plan, we should be constructing zoning that helps us get there. So,
my other question and concern is with a lot of the younger generation, they're not interested in the larger houses. They are pretty much interested in homes that are going to be for temporary stay, and they don't have a tendency to live in those homes as long as most of the elderly normally do. And so they're, because I understand they're not as committed to jobs and wanting to be with a particular employer for years. And so they're moving on a lot faster and a lot quicker. And I'd like to see us also address those needs.
Any additional questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you. We often hear about site selectors, but site selectors don't talk to the council. They talk to staff.
Correct.
And this would be a great forum to kind of open up the thought of what types of questions do site selectors ask to Oral Valley? What are they looking for, you know, when evaluating us as a potential place to either build a new location or to move to?
And that's, you know, that's a very good question, and I'd happily defer that to Mr. Melcher.
Okay. Thank you, Councilmember Bowen, members of the council. So we get very focused in terms of what the site selectors are looking at, and I'll frame it in terms of housing so we don't get too far afield. But relative to the housing, you're right. It's looking at the type of primary recruitment that is being discussed. So if we have a site selector coming, looking in, let's just use a high-tech company right now, typically that demographic is going to be, if it's particularly for manufacturing or other production activity, it's probably going to be in a younger demographic looking for high-skilled, high-tech. So then you could also look at that corresponding need for that type of housing that either attracts or expands that work pool. But it's going to be relative to whatever that need is based on manufacturing type development, you know, for that site selector.
Do they ask questions regarding pricing of different types of housing or known supply? I'm just trying to figure out, you know, when they're evaluating us as a place for a potential relocation, in your mind, what are the key points that they're driving at?
So, Councilmember Bowen, I can say that site selectors will do 90% of their homework before they even get to ask specific questions. So they'll already take a look at existing studies to determine what price points look like for either the rental or home ownership, percentage of home ownership, and other factors that would be found in a housing study. So from that perspective, most of that's already done before they get to that point where they're talking with staff.
So is it safe to say if we had a housing study, that's something that would be very helpful to staff?
Absolutely.
Here you go.
Because affordability is, when we look at recruiting high-tech talent. It's affordability, amenities, and what the community quality of life is. Those are the top three aspects that are analyzed as part of that review.
Thank you.
Councilmember Nicholson.
So when they do these housing studies, how much do they look at the fact that, like, you know, you can drive from one end of Oro Valley to the other end, and it takes like 10 minutes versus like a housing study in Tucson, drive from the west end to the east end or something like that, can be like an hour drive. And I know, like, we want to bring in good quality workforce, but obviously Raytheon down where I don't work at Raytheon, but I work at the control tower down there. A lot of brilliant, smart people, but there's very few Raytheon employees that work, you know, right next to the airport. So how much do they look at, like, okay, they want affordable housing right here in Tucson. I know a lot of citizens here don't want tall buildings with apartment buildings right in their backyards. We hear that all the time. But, you know, you also have Marana next door in Tucson. They're a lot more likely or willing to build tall apartments wherever. So how much does that affect, like, doing the housing study when it's you're very close to another market right next door that may build something that maybe your workforce needs here or they need to see that? But, you know, the employees drive 5 minutes over two miles to get into Oro Valley from Marana, and how much weight does that kind of carry?
So, Councilmember Nicholson, if I could ask, could you pare that down a little bit? What would be the specific question so I could make sure I get it answered?
So when they do the housing studies, I guess the location of the study for Oro Valley, the availability of having that be met next door, I guess. How much do they look at that?
So, Councilmember Nicholson, thank you. I think they would look at it in two ways. One is the available labor pool, both locally in Oro Valley and regional, because, as you said, a lot of companies pull not only from that primary area where they're located, but we consider our region to be part of a labor shed based on whatever that recruitment part is looking for. So the site selector is looking for whatever so that we can actually do the mapping and show and indicate where that labor pool exists. So it would be part of that discussion, yes. But factoring in commute, also they would factor in transportation possibilities, not only for just single commuter transportation, vanpooling, carpooling, mass transit, and so on.
And buyer, kind of the same thing for you. Like, when they're doing those housing studies, do they look at the ability of the housing being built next door? Like, we may not necessarily need to build those units right here in Oro Valley. If they build it a mile and a half away in Marana or Tucson, do they take that stuff into account at all? And they look at the housing stock and what's being built next door at all?
That would be smart. That would be smart. And yes. And it's quite timely. It will be timely for the town to be working on this because, this is these are the types of studies that Marana, City of Tucson, they're all moving forward on. So certainly, it's a region, and that's part of the fabric of housing. So yes, that's something we would look at.
Councilmember Bowen.
Regarding our housing study, you know, how much of the data that we ultimately use in the end regarding the actual inventory we have and the condition of it will involve sort of eyes-on observation by staff? I know you have a small group, but it's very close. Is there any plan, or do you ever go out and confirm, you know, what you're pulling in data from outside sources to say, does that really reflect what I see in Oro Valley?
So, give you an example with the apartment study. So, we hired a third party to do the work, but we actually put boots on the ground to go to different apartments, talk to apartment managers, and make sure that the rent information was correct, age of the building information, all that data that you can get out of the assessor's office, you know. Now, we certainly put boots on the ground, and the consultants rely on us to feed that type of data. So, absolutely. Staff will be doing just as much work as the consultant in terms of compiling all of the information and verifying it.
So am I correct to understand that a lot of the information in the apartment study was actually personally collected and confirmed by our staff?
Yes. Yes. A great example in the apartment study are the crime statistics. That was all staff derived and confirmed through the police department.
Well, personally, I want to applaud that because a study is only as good as the actual data that sure. you feed into it. It's very easy to make a model that doesn't tell you a lot. So I'm greatly appreciative to all the legwork that the staff does. And I know for a complete housing study, that's just simply not practical. Apartments are a subset, and you can right. really focus, and it's very specific. But, you know, I applaud any work that staff can do, legwork, to observe what data that you pull about Oral Valley from outside is appreciated. Because we only do this to have good information that guides good decisions. It's not just checking a box. But for me personally, I want to make decisions that are good and people are going to be happy about. And I just can't overemphasize how important it is, the quality of your data. So thank you again for the legwork you did on the apartment study.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Bowen and Councilmember Nicholson, for bringing this item to a study session. Byer and Mullaney, Paul, thank you for being a part of this discussion. I appreciate the fact that you reiterated that the scope of this housing study is going to come to the council, and thank you for reminding us of that. I'm going to adjourn the study session. Before you all rush home, I'm going to resume the regular session. And for those that may be wondering why that's the case, when we began our regular session at 5 o'clock, there was a motion to go into executive session. There were two items, the Vistoso Golf Course, and then a presentation regarding IT infrastructure and security. There wasn't enough time in that executive session to get to the second executive session. So I move that we go into the second executive session item with the town manager, assistant town manager, town attorney, chief information officer, and the town clerk.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Ayes have it 7-0. We'll go into executive session. The regular session. As a reminder to council, we agreed to cancel the December 15th town council meeting. So I'd like to wish everybody a joyous and safe holiday. We'll resume January 5th. With that, I'd like to make a motion to adjourn the regular session.
Second.
Seconded by Vice Mayor Barrett. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Nay. Ayes have it 7-0. Good night, everyone. Thank you.